The Kickoff on Radio City Talk. Your one stop for Merseyside sport.
This is Radio City Talk.
Delighted to welcome to the studio Emile Coleman, who's the CEO of Global Coach, a company which is revolutionising the way coaches prepare football teams, football clubs prepare for games, and the whole technology behind it. Morning to you, Emile.
Morning, Steve.
We'll talk a little bit about that later on, but I want to talk about another subject, which I know is close to your heart, and something we'll be more than aware of recently. So you were involved in Wirral Live recently. You were involved in running some of the operation on the day. And of course, one of the massive headline grabbers was on day two when Jeremy Corbyn turned up there. Now, you are the man responsible for this. One of the people behind it.
Yeah.
It was a masterstroke, and it's been mostly credited for the huge turnout, maybe, in the youth vote in the general election. Just give us the background a little bit to the story about how Jeremy Corbyn turned up on the stage just before the Libertines.
I think the story itself is so bizarre in terms of how it is and how it came about. It kind of sums up the kind of general election in every which way. I was actually on holiday in Greece. I'd been brought in to help out on Wirral Live. I actually came out of retirement for that one. And, you know, we've worked together in the past years, so it was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But so, you know, sitting over breakfast one morning, actually with my mother, and we came up with an idea about, you know, how we could get Corbyn and you know, voter registration involved with Wirral Live, because obviously it was before the voter deadline. So, you know, a call goes to Labour HQ and then another call comes back to me, and then we're just back and forth on a few ideas. And it was a 10-day period of back and forth, and we weren't really kind of getting anywhere. And originally, you know...
Did you know what you wanted to do straight away? Or was it this process of something emerging after a series of phone calls and conversations between you?
I think the fact was we wanted to do something more. So, you know, from a personal perspective, I think we wanted to be able to show and help whatever, you know, when you've got a platform like that, you know, I think in a weird way, you have a responsibility to be able to use that platform in a clever way. And it was a captive audience to be able to do that. But it was a dicey situation, and it wasn't an easy situation, you know, and 10 days of back and forth, not from Labour's perspective, because to be fair, they were fantastic. But from, you know, the music industry is inherently a very difficult music industry, a bit like football. And we, you know, it was a difficult thing to kind of get together. And up until the Friday night, which was literally the day before, it wasn't happening. And we'd been, you know, for 10 days back and forth.
Although rumours were circulating on the Friday night, weren't they?
They were circulating. And, you know, I couldn't possibly say where them rumours may have started from. You know, I'm smiling at people who may be sitting in the room with us right now. But the rumours did start. And a Friday night, I get an email saying, hey, look, you know, one of the bands wants to, you know, bring Jeremy Corbyn on stage. Okay, so another call goes to Labour. And within an hour, it started then. And we literally, you know, we had probably 16 hours to put that together. That's a massive, massive task, you know, from a security perspective, from an event perspective, from a media perspective. And literally, you know, the Met Police were onto me within 30 minutes. They were on a train that morning, first thing out of London, up here in Liverpool and over the water. And then the fun really, really began on the day itself. And that the story of how that happened, and the you know, even 30 minutes before, one of the bands was saying no, they can stay nameless for now, but people can guess. You know, the headline act was so supportive.
And you wonder whether one of the bands, and we won't talk about the different band names, whether they're thinking at the time, oh, do we want to merge showbiz with politics? Do we want to cross lines here?
Hugely so. And, you know, other bands had said no to things for that reason. And you have to respect that, because it is politics and it is their opinion and their beliefs. And, you know, that's their basic human right. So, you know, you do take a step back from that, and you go, okay, I can respect you for that. But there was a groundswell which started on that day, and the Libertines were really, really supportive. Pete Doherty himself, hugely supportive of Corbyn, and really wanted to push it. But the timing of it was really, really difficult, because Corbyn is on his battle bus in West Kirby at this time, where there's hundreds of people that's turned out. We're running a concert the other side with, you know, thousands of people and trying to get them from A to B with the police and anti-terrorism, counter-terrorism and everything that was going on. Was just literally madness. Sorry for the pun, you know, that was the Friday night, but it was madness. We eventually decide how he's going to go on the stage as well, because it was also reflective on Corbyn too, and it was difficult, and it wasn't an easy thing. And luckily, Reverend and the Makers were were playing. And I have to give them a huge amount of credit for what they did and how they did it. Probably one of the best intros I've ever seen, you know, as he walks out onto the stage, you know, John McCure introduces him as like, you know, one of the rising stars of UK grime. And here's this, you know, not even middle-aged white man in a suit walks out on the stage and then just drops this speech. And the speech itself was phenomenal in how he did it. And for me, you know, I'm a bit more respect for him even after that, because he was so natural. And, you know, it's, you know, they're on a heavy schedule. That guy had been up since, I think, 5 in the morning. Yeah. He hadn't stopped. And, you know, I sat with him and as I walked him through, we were talking and I was saying some things to him, saying, look, this is what your crowd's like. This is the type of people. This is the audience. And I said a few things to him, which is, you know, it's pretty private. And then he got up there and he did it. And then from nowhere came that chant. And that chant now is essentially becoming history. And it's a real, you know, it's very indicative of how viral kind of marketing and viral things work nowadays. And, you know, there's a piece in The Guardian the other day saying, where did it come from? Where did this, you know, Jeremy Corbyn chant, you know, where did it, you know, start? And it started here in Whittle.
It started here
at Prenton Park that day. And it was natural. And I was standing just, you know, maybe 12 foot away from him to the side. And this chant just comes out and thousands of people are starting to chant this person's name. And you saw both him grow and the crowd go. And that relationship, it was almost like audience performer. That relationship was phenomenal. And it grew and it grew and it reached a crescendo, which was just amazing. And then from there, that spread. You know, I think the video within 24 hours had over 2 million hits. 2 million hits. I think it was a 5-point swing in the polls. 5 points. How can you get that? And I think that was key, you know, to where people are, you know, now, you know, the post-mortem after the election and what's still going on. But, you know, people were saying, how did Corbyn do it? He did it by being Corbyn, but he also did it by being very, very clever, which he is, you know, known for.
And they are crediting that weekend almost as a little bit of a starting point of the huge change in, well, the huge shift in the polls.
Completely. I mean, you know, a week later, he's sitting on Hackney Fields or Marshes, whatever it's called, playing football. And, you know, these guys from Copa 90 are interviewing him and they're saying to him, you know, asking him a question. He starts talking about being in Liverpool, starts talking about why he loves Liverpool and Whittle and all these people in front of him. And they start asking about people chanting his name and then it erupted. And then you see it in, I think it was Boss Night, you know, when at the end of the season, Liverpool fans chanting his name, Champions League final chanting his name. You know, that itself. When have you seen that with a politician?
Well, you don't. And I think this is one of the remarkable aspects of what he did. And there's various storylines you could look at. But the idea of him being asked, do you want to come out at a pop concert and talk to a group which is essentially an average age group of a Libertines concert? What, 20 to 25?
Probably,
a little bit older?
Yeah, yeah.
20 to 30, maybe.
Put someone else up there, would they care? Put Theresa May up there, see what happens.
Absolutely. So he must have been thinking, am I going to flunk? Would it not work? Will they just see me as a granddad? But he obviously had massive self-belief and confidence to do it.
He did. But listen, I was thinking that at the same time because, you know, when you orchestrate or you're part of something like that, your head's on the chopping block as well. And, you know, it went the right way, I have to say.
Yeah.
But that, you know, we wrote a report afterwards, actually, just a marketing report talking about it. And we showed the reach of what that was. Unbelievable. Across the world, he hit the headlines with that. And you just looked how that grew and then grew and grew until we were, you know, what we saw in the election. I think it was, what, 40% share in terms of voters, you know, 5% more than Tony Blair ever had. Listen, I'm not a big Labour supporter. I can put my hands up and say that wholeheartedly. I have various issues with them as a political organisation. But Corbyn as an individual and as a man, it has a huge amount of integrity and it's something you don't normally say about politicians, but he has. And I think that's what resonated with voters. I think it also resonated with football fans as well. And I think that was the really interesting thing because here he was, a politician in a football stadium at a concert. It's a really, really weird mix. But it worked for that reason.
Given a very short time to prepare for it, to get his ideas together in his head.
He walked in, he came, you know, the car pulled up, we brought him in, he grabbed a bite to eat, literally in 2 seconds, we were talking, he met a few people. He then walked on that stage and, you know, that walk was probably 90 seconds. And in that 90 seconds, I'm in his ear talking to him and trying to relax him as well because, you know, there's thousands of people out there too.
Yeah.
And we're just chatting and we're actually laughing. And, you know, he got up there, he nailed it. But for me, one of the sights always was seeing this lad in this, in, you know, the Corbyn Nike t-shirt. It was Bristol Streetwear which did it down in Bristol, just started this, you know, put this t-shirt out, ripped the Nike logo, which became a huge, you know, kind of hit for them. It's very trendy to have this t-shirt, and you saw it about in many places. In the Manchester concert, you know, one of the artists, I think it was Clean Bandit, they were wearing it. Got censored by the BBC, by the way. They blared it out, which is also very interesting. But there's a lad on the shoulders at Wirral Live, and he's got this t-shirt on. And the camera zooms into him at one point, but there were so many people looking at him. But Corbyn could not help but see this lad because he's right in his eye line. And I kind of love the synergy of that, of, you know, here's this politician standing up there. And it just catches an eye of it. He mustn't have been about 18, 19. I wonder if he'd ever voted before. But I tell you something, a lot of them people who stood there that day will have went out and voted Labour after that.
And a lot of people who would have seen it on the news. We've seen the figures recently in terms of the swell, the upshift in young voters that particularly took part in this campaign.
Huge. I mean, you know, one of the figures I read was 72%. 72%. How do you, you know, people mock Corbyn for what he was doing, but he managed to invigorate, you know, a youth population which has come off the back of, you know, essentially a nation of individuals. I mean, you look at it from the 80s. I'm an 80s child. I'm 39 now. And, you know, I grew up under a Conservative government probably all of my adult life. I think I was 16 when it changed. So I knew nothing different. We became a nation of individuals after Thatcher, you could argue, in many, many ways. And, you know, here's this old guy, you know, who's been a backbencher for years, who comes to the forefront of a political party. And then, you know, you've got grime artists, people like Stormzy, you know, and everyone coming out for this guy. And you're going, this doesn't make sense. And whilst people were mocking him, yeah, these people went out and voted, the people who were supporting them. And it's going to be very interesting how you counter that. I mean, you saw it in America with Bernie Sanders. You know, Bernie Sanders had a similar groundswell, very, very similar in how it worked. Mainstream press weren't following him. But, you know, the difference is, and I heard this on a radio interview the other day, was there was a political correspondent saying, as journalists, and, you know, yourself as a journalist, you know, you follow Twitter, you follow certain things, but then people going out and voting, that 72% of the youth vote are getting snippets, whether it be YouTube, whether it be Facebook, like we're broadcasting now on Facebook Live.
Yep.
You know, all them things. That's how people are consuming their media, consuming the news now. So his voice, the way he was speaking to them, that's how it came out. And it was phenomenal in that sense at a concert in Prenton Park. You know, you think about that, how that could have a shift and impact on a whole nation. Just unbelievable.
When you were deciding whether to do it or not, it's almost a very American thing to do, isn't it? You know, the American politicians do bring out the pop stars who wholeheartedly back their campaigns, but it's something we haven't seen in Britain.
No, we haven't. I mean, they had Rock the Vote very early on, and, you know, I mean, it's a different country in terms of how the media works there, but I think you're going to see that now. But that's going to be hard because, you know, I saw before the election.
You've set a precedent, haven't you, really?
We are. God knows what we're going to do next year. Like, but, you know, there was, I think, I saw a vote, like, it was a meme almost of who supports the Conservative Party, and you had things like Phil Collins and Katie Hopkins, and then you had who supports Jeremy Corbyn, you had Stormzy, you had all these amazing artists coming out and really famous people who were really, really cool. And I'm going, well, hold on a second. These are influencers, and that's, you know, we were having a convo the other day. I was talking to you about influencers, but people are influenced now in many, many different ways. And Corbyn understood that. And that was it. I mean, I don't think from a marketing perspective, from a cultural perspective, will we see something like that again? I don't know. But for once, we had the best mix of culture, which Liverpool's renowned for, but football, politics, music, all in one place, all in one time. And we managed to influence a whole nation from that.
Will see it again. And I think they'll look back and look at that as a bit of a foundation of how it is used to influence people.
Well, I think you're probably right. And I know what happened after that. You know, Labour were very savvy.
Well, what did he say immediately as you walked out with Jeremy Corbyn? Was he happy with it?
Yeah, he said to me as he was going, he said, how long have I got, Emile? And I looked at him and he got about 4 minutes. He went, okay. So as he walks off, he says, how was that? I said, great, great. He said, how long was I? I said, nice 4 minutes. He said to me, you're lying, aren't you? And I went, yeah. And he went, you're cheeky, aren't you? And I went, yeah. And he said, how long? I went, look, let's just say it was a rough 4 minutes, but look at the crowd. And he went, are you sure it was all right? I went, fantastic, well done. Yeah. And he had a smile about him and he walked off. You know, the rest is history. It really, really is. And in a weird way, you kind of created a bit of political and cultural history there that day. I just think from now on going on, we are going to have to see a shift. Mm. You know, Labour were clever. They brought artists in very, very quickly. So Reverend and the Makers, who introduced them, started to play for Labour over the next few weeks. And Labour were really concentrating very cleverly in a very organic way of targeting people one-on-one, whether that be people knocking at a door or musically and culturally. That's where I think you're going to see the shift. Definitely.
It's fascinating how the seed was planted and how it turned into something so big and such an influence.
Over breakfast in Greece, you know, and that's the reality. And I kind of sit back and laugh at that I'm meant to be on holiday sitting by a pool on the phone with Jeremy Corbyn's office discussing Little Mix Madness and the Libertines. And you're thinking, oh my God, how is this ever going to work? Is it going to come together? But it did. It had a worldwide reach. The rest is history. You know, I'm very privileged and proud to play a part in that. Even if one person decided, I'm going to go out and vote, we did something well that day, especially if that was a young person, because from a generational perspective, that will roll and keep going.
Steve Hoddersall's kickoff. This is Radio City Talk.